Senator Josh Miller, welcome.
Thank you for inviting me.
Rhode Island has really embraced Obamacare, I think it's fair to say, and you've championed legislation to strengthen Obamacare's reach here in Rhode Island. How does a Trump presidency change your immediate legislative priorities?
Our priorities are still what our priorities would have been without that. It's just whether we have to modify them at all. And we may not know for quite a while whether we have to modify them at all. Rhode Island is in the distinct advantage of having a very healthy exchange on the local level.
HealthSource RI,
which has covered a lot of people very effectively at good cost terms. We are one of the few exchanges across the country that actually had a reduction rather than increase in rates. So I think we're in a good position, maybe even on the national level. When they look at the conditions state from state, they'll know that there are successes and places where there are problems, and they'll look at Rhode Island as something that is to strive for rather than to disrupt. Mm-hmm. So we're hopeful that that is the case. What will be interesting, both budgetary and access to as many people possible that we may or may not have to react to legislatively, will be what happens to Medicaid. And we are going to have to be prepared and ready to react to changes in how states are funded on Medicaid. But Rhode Island is also in the position, as many other expansion states, Medicaid expansion states are, where we have a 5-year commitment for the levels of expansion that we have and we expected, and the rate of federal participation, which is about 90% and changes over year to year. But
so to translate, the federal government is paying a greater portion of Medicaid bills for people who enrolled after they expanded eligibility.
Exactly.
So Rhode Island doesn't have to foot as much of the bill for
those
people.
Right, so I think it's currently about 90% that the Fed picks up. And so it diminishes the state effort and the state expense for a low-income population that qualifies.
There are so many unknowns right now, and you're saying that we have a 5-year guarantee from the federal government to get that Medicaid money to cover all of those extra people, all those tens of thousands of people we couldn't cover before. But what if President-elect Donald Trump and a Republican Congress decided to roll back that Medicaid eligibility and end subsidies for people who buy insurance on the health exchange, HealthSource RI? Does Rhode Island have any options for retaining affordable health insurance coverage for those people?
There is no scenario that we can anticipate that would actually drop people that are currently enrolled, either in Medicaid or on an exchange. We just don't see that as politically feasible. And I think it's a bipartisan issue that you don't want to drop people that are currently enrolled. Mm-hmm. It's whether it becomes a federal or a state expense and whether the state pushes forward, even if it's more of an expense. It's not feasible politically, at least as the way most people have interpreted it, especially with the Trump administration already embracing certain components of the ACA. Such as keeping young people on and
until they're 26, they can stay on their parents' insurance.
Yeah, and keeping those with pre-existing conditions available to enroll. We see that even that kind of acknowledgement from the Trump administration shows that there's probably not an interest in dropping people, especially low-income people, especially people that they're trying to enroll. We are ready and we're thinking about how to keep people on, but we don't really think it's something we'll have to do.
And of course, the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare is a huge piece of legislation. It's more than 1,000 pages. It's got many, many moving parts. And part of that is that a lot of Obamacare money has flowed into Rhode Island to fund projects that try to kind of realign payment with quality or outcomes rather than pay a fee for each and every medical service. And those are still experimental in some cases, some of those projects. Do they stand a chance in your estimation?
We actually anticipate funding to encourage that. That hasn't been talked about as in danger at all. I mm-hmm. think a lot of those efforts away from fee-for-service and towards, you know, population health and other payment models, it's something that we feel is still pretty bipartisan and not endangered. Mm-hmm. I might be a little too optimistic about this, but I think you also see a lot of people on all sides of healthcare and healthcare delivery who are going to be very much involved in making sure that this is preserved, because there's a downside for institutions that exist in every state, no matter what their politics are. Every hospital would be endangered by going backwards and having hospitals not reimbursed, having more people not insured. The hospitals won't want to turn back on that. Those who provide care won't want to turn back on that. Insurers won't want to turn back on mm-hmm. that. So there are forces for sensible ways to deliver service that we're going to deliver one way or another. It's those forces are still going to be there. And so moving forward with a more efficient way to pay for things that we're already paying for, and we've paid for decades, ever since that we have had the rule of law in America that you cannot deny service, whether they're a qualified immigrant or not. Everybody is required to receive care. And so how do you pay for it, and what is the most efficient way? And that's what the conversation is going to be. And pulling back on access to insurance is a more expensive way of doing things. And I think everybody's going to acknowledge that at some point or another in this discussion.
Mm-hmm. So there are many people wringing their hands about the possible repeal of Obamacare, but I'm hearing a sense of calm, a sense of forward motion, of purpose in what you're saying.
Yes, I think there are things that we can and have to solve on a local level. And there are ways that protect people from changes, whether they be either on a local level or a federal level, to create access to care that actually saves money rather than costs money. If people have better, more efficient access to health care, whether it be behavioral or medical, it saves money. It doesn't cost money. So we think those things are an effort that won't meet a lot of resistance. And we think that we have to react to what may happen on the federal level without anticipating what it is.
Senator Josh Miller of Cranston, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for bringing me in.